Also come to order, then clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Rosenbaum, excused for business of the House, Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Kim Thatcher.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Cannon.
Speaker, I am going to introduce our 11 honorary pages. They are all from Odyssey Montessori School, and I'm going to ask them to stand individually as I call their names. So first, Eli Hirsch, please stand. He's a sixth grader at Odyssey, 12 years old. He wants to work in the humanities field. He plays guitar and piano and likes doing karaoke, and is interested in being a neurosurgeon when he enters his career. Thank you for being here. Second, B. Steffen, also a sixth grader at Odyssey, likes to play the guitar, likes studying zoology and bouldering, and is open to anything when it comes to a career. Thank you for being here, B. Third, Zach Swafford. Zach is a sixth grader at Odyssey, and I will have the great pleasure of teaching him next year as a seventh grader at the Arbor School. Zach likes playing the guitar. He likes building stuff. He wants to be a lawyer, a scientist, or an inventor. Thank you for being here, Zach. Ryland Allred, would you please stand? He is a sixth grader at Odyssey. He attends YMA acting camp, enjoys acting and writing, and is interested in being an actor. Shane Evans, would you please stand? Also a sixth grader at Odyssey, interested in math, history, art, and bears. Wants to be a scientist when he grows up. Thank
colleagues,
you, Shane.
Your conversations are far too noisy for people to be able to give appropriate attention to Representative Cannon. Can you please take those conversations outside of the chamber?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for helping us set a good example to these students. Daniel Silverman, a sixth grader at Odyssey, plays the piano and does competitive swimming. Also likes computer games, wants to be a lawyer, a programmer, or perhaps a revolutionary. Thank you for being here, Daniel. Julian Andrews, a sixth grader at Odyssey, belongs to the drama club, plays the violin, and enjoys writing, is interested in global warming, science, and math, wants to be an environmental engineer. Thank you for being here, Julian. Grace Ledbetter, sixth grader at Odyssey, and is interested in being a film director for Ninja. We'll have to talk about that. Thank you, Grace. Nina Custer, also sixth grader at Odyssey, plays the piano, participates in gymnastics, soccer, and enjoys art and math. Hasn't yet decided what she wants to be, which is, I think, a very good thing. Thanks for being here, Grace. Liam Coffey participates on the YMCA swimming team and is interested in being an interior designer. Thank you, Liam. And finally, Layla Grice, one of my constituents and one of my most involved and active constituents, is a sixth grader at Odyssey, helped organize this trip for her peers. She likes swimming, playing the piano, poetry, acting, and cooking. She aspires to be a chef or a women's rights activist, and I encourage you to talk to her about differences in pay for men and women and other political subjects. Thank you all for being here, Odyssey Montessori sixth graders, and for your involvement in school and with state government.
Further courtesies, Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend courtesies to Riverview Elementary. I'd like to have them all stand up if they would. They're from one of my favorite cities in my community, from Lebanon. The teachers are Sherry Wardlaw and Judy Kaur, so bid them welcome, please.
Further courtesies. I'd like to invite the delegation from Italy to come to the side rail. We have a delegation from Tuscany. They are guests of Senator Ryan Deckert. We are so pleased to have you with you. They are led by Claudio Martini, the president of Tuscany, former mayor of Prato, a published author and a talented man. It's a delight to have you with us. Welcome. He is joined in his delegation by Lorenzo Murgia, Vice President for Tuscan Foreign Affairs. You'd never know I spent a summer hitchhiking around Italy with that pronunciation. My apologies. Remo Fattorini, Press Secretary, Flavio Donati, Assistant to the President, Roberto Pucci, Director of Promotional Agency of Tuscany, Silvia Berzagli, Deputy to Mr. Pucci, and Eva Mosconi, Assistant to Mr. Pucci. We are delighted to have you all with us here in Oregon. We wish we could say that we were soon sending a delegation back to Italy. If there's a way for that to happen, I'm sure you have about 60 volunteers on the floor of this house to come and join you. Thank you so much for being with us here in Oregon. Thank you. Further courtesies, Representative Bonamici.
Senior Speaker, on behalf of the Oregon Legislature, I would like to give a special welcome to our guests from Tuscany, which is where my family is from. Benvenuto a Oregon. And Mr. Speaker, parla molto bene l'italiano. Grazie, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies. Today is Representative Chuck Riley's birthday. Happy birthday, Chuck. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President informing the Senate has passed House Bill 3025 and Senate Bill 560. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President informing that he has signed House Bills 2070, 2118, 2149, 2129. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President informing that he has signed Senate Bills 122, 149, 178, 195, 233, 256, 266, 267, 341, 399, 490, 569, 678, 880, 892, and 967.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions.
Schaffler's your first one. Thank you very much. We were talking about you just a few minutes ago.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, I would move House Bill 3425 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Richardson, can you restate your motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3425 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Committee on?
Revenue.
On Revenue. Thank you. Representative Richardson moves that House Bill 3425 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. It is not in order to discuss the merits of a bill upon a motion to withdraw the bill from committee. Debate must be confined strictly to the purpose of the motion. Representative Richardson, to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3425.
Representative Richardson, I'm sorry, pause for a moment. Colleagues, everyone's feeling pretty feisty today. We really do need to ask you to take those conversations outside in the lobby. Please give Representative Richardson your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3425 is a bill that reduces capital gains tax rates on individuals from 9% to 7% and on corporations from 6.6% to 5%. It's a vitally important piece of legislation that needs to have a vote, and we need to have it to come to the floor.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Obviously, since we were just informed this motion was coming about 30 seconds ago, I've not seen the actual bill. My assumption is it is like all the other bills that have had motions to withdraw. It's obviously by the number of it, it was actually introduced very late in the session. And in terms of withdrawing it today, it makes absolutely no sense to spend, I believe, if I'm thinking of the correct bill, to spend $230 million without actually going through a process, either in ways and means, to fund that through the revenue that's already been identified, or if it's not going to be funded based on identified revenue, then to identify new revenue to offset that. So withdrawing that bill today makes absolutely no sense, but I'm sure it gives an opportunity for some male consultants to develop some very nice hit pieces for some members of the body.
Representative Hunt, I did not catch your last comment, but I'm informed it is not germane or appropriate to the this discussion. Representative Richardson, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. But I would like to... We'll let it pass. Below-the-belt shots like that are inappropriate. House Bill 3425 is appropriate to come forward at this time because we now have a revenue forecast that increases the available funds to this body by $152 million. That kind of money means that we can do those things which are beneficial to the state of Oregon. We need to have this bill come forward. It does not get a proper hearing, proper work session, and proper consideration in the Revenue Committee. It will not come forward without it coming forward by this body taking this action today.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 3425 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Representative Gelser is off the floor. Is excused. Representative Gelser is excused. Representative David Edwards, votes aye. Representative Clem, Representative Clem is off the floor. Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Nolan is excused for business of the House. Representative Crummell. Representative Crummell is off the floor. This requires 31 aye votes. So the motion, having failed to receive the required majority, fails. Representative Schaffler.
Is it on? Thank you. Can you hear me now? I could really take off on that one today, but I'm not going to. Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2075A and repass the bill.
Representative Schaffler moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2075A and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2075A deals with correcting terminology in landscape contracting statutes in regards to the proper usage of the term landscape contractor. The measure also allows a landscaping business owner who is a licensed landscape contractor to not have a fellow landscape contractor oversee the business's landscape operations and authorizes the administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board to appoint advisory and technical committees to assist the board. The Senate adopted amendments to resolve conflicts with House Bill 2076, which authorizes Oregon Landscape Contractors Board to issue probationary landscape contractor licenses and expands the options for meeting the minimum education and experience requirements for being licensed as a landscape contractor. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? It is not. Those who are of the opinion, the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2075A and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler votes no. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Clem. Representative Clem is off the floor. Representative Crummell. Representative Crummell is off the floor. Representative Flores votes aye. House Bill 2075A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Representative Tomei. Excuse me just a moment. Representative Kahn, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to return to courtesies for just a moment.
Representative Kahn passed unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. It is an honor that we have a third and fourth grade class from St. Luke's in Woodburn, Oregon. And Mrs. Pruitt is their teacher, and they're going to be touring the Capitol, maybe going up the steps to the Gold Man in a few minutes. So thank you for taking time to welcome them here to the Capitol.
For the courtesies, Representative Richardson.
I have no courtesy. Another point of business.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to sneak in on courtesies here. Colleagues, please welcome some special guests today. We had a signing ceremony today for House Bill 2823, which was the honorary degrees for folks who were interned during the World War II that we passed earlier. And with us today, we have Andy Kayuna. And if you recall, Andy was the genesis of the bill, an OSU student who came up with the idea. And his parents, Leanne and Gary, are here today. If you guys want to stand up and wave at the crowd. And Leanne and Gary came all the way from NYSA today and represented Butler's district. So thank you and welcome to the House.
Representative Richardson. Are there further courtesies? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the encouragement of a bipartisan vote on the last motion, we're going to try one more. I would move that House Bill 3430 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Richardson moves that House Bill 3430 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. You know the guidelines, so I won't reread them. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3430 brings the Oregon inheritance tax in line with federal law by increasing the exemption for taxable estates from $1 million to $2 million. It's vitally needed for small farms and small businesses and for Oregonians, and we'd like to have this come to the floor at this time.
For the discussion, Representative Hunt, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate being able to talk to the committee process on the inheritance tax issue. The committee is working diligently on issues involving the inheritance tax, the subject of this bill. We're not ready to bring an item directly to the floor, but that is something which is definitely part of the committee process. We've held hearings on a number of bills involving this issue. And it is not timely to bring this issue up now. There are a number of important policy considerations that need to be made. There are a number of technical tax considerations that your Committee on Revenue is especially responsible for. It is not appropriate that the House consider the bill at this time, but it is appropriate that the Revenue Committee continue its work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Richardson, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, only to say that we appreciate the good work being conducted by the Revenue Committee, and we're just afraid that with the time marching on as it is, that this very important legislation will somehow fall through the cracks, and we'd like to have it come to the floor at this time.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 3430 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Representative Chris Edwards votes aye. The motion, having failed to receive the necessary 31 votes, is declared failed. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to 2184A and repass the bill.
Representative Tomei moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2184A and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the amendments that came over from the Senate side specify that the Deputy Director and Principal Assistant Personnel positions in the Department of Human Services are unclassified service employees who serve at the pleasure of the Director of the Department of Human Services.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2184A will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Nelson votes aye. Representative Butler votes no. House Bill 2148, having received the constitutionally required majority, is declared repassed. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2345B and repass the bill.
Representative Krieger moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2345B and repass the bill. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker and colleagues, the Senate amendment limit the damages in the dog bite bill to economic loss, which was really the original intent of the bill, and that would include medical costs, and that's what we wanted to do.
Further discussion, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to speak in favor of this motion. Although I would have to say I don't support the change that was made in the Senate, that where they scaled the damages down from to only economic damages, because it's based on what I think is a misimpression, which is that damages which are not measured in lost wages or property loss or replacement aren't real damages. In fact, people do suffer pain and suffering damages, and those are meaningful remedies that people get under our system of justice. And what it, this has this change would have a negative impact on somebody who is injured by a dog bite, who is, for example, somebody who's retired or not in the workforce and can't come up with substantial measurable economic damages. But the main bill is a very good bill, and I really appreciate the work that my colleague from Southwestern Oregon has done on this bill and bringing this important bill forward. As I've said on this in this chamber before, the range of legislation that we've passed this session, this is actually one of those bills that will stand out over time because it changes us, moves us away from what I think is an inappropriate common law rule where you had to prove foreseeability in the form of prior dog bites by the animal in question. And by removing that standard here, at least for economic damages, I think we've advanced the condition of the law in Oregon, and I will support this motion.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
It is not. Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2345B and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Hannah, how do you vote? Hannah votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. HB 2345, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. Representative Holby, your motion, please.
Good morning, Madam Speaker.
Okay.
I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2620B and repass the bill.
Representative Holby moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2620B and repass the bill. To your motion.
Okay. Madam Speaker, House Bill 2620B, if you recall, provides that public improvement contracts for new construction require solar technology of at least 1.5%. The Senate made an amendment that helped clarify the definition of public building and gave the Department of Energy some latitude in determining whether a structure was a public building, because we have all different kinds of definitions throughout statutes that are different about public buildings. This definition was to help the special districts in determining some of their structures wouldn't really be appropriate for solar technology. So this amendment helps address that issue. I urge and I vote on this motion.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I'd just like to bring out to our colleagues here that this bill is a mandate on local government. It specifies what they have to include in the construction bids that they obtain and decisions that they make in local government. And so we are not funding the additional costs that this will cause them to incur, so it's an unfunded mandate on local government, and I'll be voting against it.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holby, do you wish to close?
I do. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the comments from the good representative from Southern Oregon. this particular bill is very permissive. The 1.5% is a very small amount of money, and if the public agency determines that it's inappropriate for a particular building, they don't have to include it on that building, but the dollar amount of that 1.5% is rolled into a future project. This is a great bill for the economy of Oregon, trying to put a shot in the arm of the solar industry in the state of Oregon, which we now have a manufacturer that's building a new plant up by the Hillsboro area, one of the largest solar photovoltaic companies in the world. This is really going to help them, and it's also going to help diversify the energy in our grid. This is really a great bill moving forward to using more renewables. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2620B and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Berger, Berger votes aye. Representative Gilman, Gilman votes no. Gilliam, sorry. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes no. Representative Krieger, Krieger votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2620B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Representative Krieger, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to return to courtesies, Madam Speaker.
Representative Krieger has asked to return to courtesies. Any objections? So, go ahead. No, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to have courtesy of the House for McGovern Elementary School from Winston. There's about 90 of them here. It's a long ways for them to travel. I want to welcome them there to the House. Thank you.
Further courtesies. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 3455 relating to urban renewal and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3555 relating to shaken baby syndrome and declaring an emergency.
Bills read the second time or passed through to the third reading. Consent calendar. Bill will read the bill. The clerk will read the bill with a short summary.
Senate Bill 199 relating to student assistance and declaring an emergency, eliminate student loan guarantee program and volunteers in service to Oregon VISTO program.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 199. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Dallum votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. Representative Jensen, Jensen votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Senate Bill 199, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2641, relating to school finance and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2641A. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I'm pleased to bring to you House Bill 2641A, which passed both your House Education and House Revenue Committees with unanimous do-pass recommendations. Oregon law allows for school districts to collect certain amounts of local option taxes that will be not considered as local revenue when determining the distribution of funds with the state school fund. However, school districts are currently limited in the amount they can collect, with overcollections being subtracted from the district's state school fund allocation. There are two limits in particular that are proving difficult to work with. The local option is capped at 15% of the general purpose grant, transportation grant, facility grant, and the high cost disabilities grant of the district, or $750 per average daily membership weighted, whichever is less for the district. An increasing number of Oregon school districts are considering local option levies to help fund vital programs for their students. The $750 per student requirement and 15% cap are keeping school districts, such as my school district in Ashland, from asking voters to approve levies that go higher than these amounts but still fall within all other legal requirements. In the case of my district, we're losing 100 students per year, and we need to be able to ask our local voters to maintain our services as we lose enrollment. House Bill 2641A raises the percentage cap from 15% to 20% and raises the dollar cap from $750 to $1,000 per weighted student with a 3% yearly increase. These changes will allow communities to fund school programs to adequate levels while maintaining the overall equality of services offered in the state's education system. I respectfully request your aye vote today on House Bill 2641A. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Those of the opinion that the bill should be passed will vote aye, and those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Schaffler votes no. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Butler votes aye. Representative Nolan, it votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Nelson votes aye. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Minnis votes no. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? McPherson votes aye. Representative Girard, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to change my vote to nay.
Representative Girard votes no. House Bill 2641, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3321, relating to health insurance and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of House Bill 3321A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I am pleased to bring you House Bill 3321. Entrepreneurs, innovators, and small businesses are key players in the economy of Oregon. They make up most of the employer firms in the state, and their contribution is indispensable. House Bill 3321 will improve the competitiveness of small businesses by clarifying the rules governing how business associations can group small business health insurance plans. This measure will exempt Association health plans from the small employer health insurance rating laws, provided they meet certain access and retention standards. Let me highlight a few key provisions of this measure. Firstly, House Bill 3321 clarifies the circumstances under which health insurance products sold by associations to small companies with up to 50 employees are exempt from complying with the Small Employer Health Insurance, or CHI, rating factors. House Bill 3321 is an important bill that ensures small employers will continue to have options for health insurance, whether in the highly regulated CHI market or through pooling with an association of the employer's choice. This bill provides associations with the tools they need to continue to provide large employer benefits to small companies, while also allowing for the collection of data to demonstrate the impact associations, discretionary trusts, and multiple employer welfare arrangements have on the marketplace. It also requires out-of-state associations to play by the same rules governing in-state associations. This measure confirms associations will not use health status information in determining eligibility for the program. The health plans will be open to all members, but will grandfather program rules for all existing association health plans. In order to be exempt from CHI rules, associations will maintain a 95% retention rate, excluding groups that have gone out of business, or merged, or were acquired, are no longer eligible for membership in the association, or eligible for the association's health plan, or fail to pay premiums. In committee, testimony was presented that associations currently offering products to their small business members that are not available to these companies on their own. In order to maintain affordable products for their members, associations need to continue to have some flexibility in rating. House Bill 3321 will allow that flexibility while gathering data and subjecting the associations to CHI factors if retention levels are not met. Lastly, in order for us to re-examine this issue, a six-year sunset is attached. Colleagues, this bill is critical to advancing the competitiveness of small businesses, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, in my other life, when I'm not legislating, I represent a number of businesses and employee trusts with respect to health care benefits and retirement benefits, and some of that clientele includes association-based health trusts. And this is a very important delivery mechanism we have for providing very solid and supportive health benefits to our Oregon workers. And this bill is, although I didn't work on it at all during its course to get to this chamber floor, I see it as a real advance in helping that form of delivery mechanism. Because what it does is it allows smaller employers, those that couldn't negotiate for good rates, to go work together through their trade association to make it what's in effect a group purchase that can then be more competitive, because really the name of the game in health benefits is how much buying power you have. A small purchaser of anything doesn't do as well in the marketplace as a large purchaser does. So it's really important that we allow our smaller employers to be able to group together and provide through that group purchase the kind of benefits that the big boys get. And so I think see this bill is a very positive advance, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I apologize for the delay. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Given that I didn't receive any questions in advance, I will accept one question.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm wondering why on page 4 of the bill, at line 45, it says an association health plan that fails to maintain 95% retention rate during any year may have 12 months to correct the retention level before losing the exemption under subsection 7 of this bill. and I'm wondering why they are at risk of losing that exemption. I'm also wondering how big does an association have to be able to take advantage of this? Does it have to be a trade association? And can it be a an employer association, such as a group of physicians or group of builders or group of any other type? Does it actually have to be a trade association that this is through? And did I mention how big does the association have to be? In other words,
yes. Now, Representative Crum, I believe that was two questions, but the carrier
is going to... Well, actually, Madam Speaker, it was three questions rolled into one. If you don't
three
want to
into
one,
okay.
Then I'm going to make sure I get them all answered.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Andrews, please proceed.
Madam Speaker, good representative from Wilsonville. I'll answer two of the three questions. I'll answer the last question first. That is, the association can be either a trade association or an employer group. And secondly, in regards to your question about Section 4, Subsection 7, those are a list of provisions that were required to ensure that association health plans were governed under the same rules as other associations in regards to selection of those who would be covered under the plans. So there were some initial issues with the original version of the bill. There were concerns that perhaps associations would have an unfair advantage in being able to so-called cherry pick or select subsections of businesses that would provide an advantage in the insurance market to associations. These provisions under Section 4, Subsection 7, and continuing along that page on page 4 that you cited, are all designed to ensure that associations fulfill the necessary requirements to remain exempt from the CHI rules.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Madam Speaker, I...
Oh.
My light's still on.
I'm sorry, Representative Crummel, you absolutely still do have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
The carrier didn't mention how big the association has to be, so I guess I'm wondering if this is really going to help all of our smaller employers. I guess based on taking a little bit of a leap of faith, as to the assistance that this can give to small employers and small businesses to be able to obtain health benefits for themselves as well as their employees, it might be worth supporting this bill. Yes, Madam Speaker.
I apologize, Representative Crummel. That's the second time I've interrupted you.
That's okay, Madam Speaker. So I guess what I'm wondering also, though, is what kind of an effect this bill will have on mandates that we continue to pass through this body. Because the more mandates we put on, the more it increases the costs to the health insurance companies. And the health insurance companies are in the business to make money. And so they will increase their premiums to cover their increased costs. Maybe the question is what effect the mandates that we pass through this body will have on this particular bill. Because out of one side of our mouth, we say we want to save small businesses money and we want them to cover their employees with some kind of a health insurance policy so that they have access to health care. And that's through bills like this, so we want to save them money. And then the other side of our mouth, we say, but oh, by the way, health insurance companies, you need to cover everything from soup to nuts. And so consequently, the health insurance companies raise their premiums, and then the assistance that we're trying to give to the small businesses never really materializes. It's just something that I would like for us to keep in mind as we go through the ending days of this session and in our hurry to pass bills, that we don't lose sight of. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Wisnett, for what purpose do you arise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, please inform me. This is only my second session. I've been here longer than that, but only my second session. And I'm troubled by the refusal of members of this body to answer questions. I've looked at the rules. Could you please tell me, did we amend the rules? I think this chamber is here to debate, to be sure that we're passing good legislation for the people of Oregon. I do not see in the rules where it says that you don't have to take a question. I think we've become accustomed to doing that this session. I don't remember that happening last session, and people have been here longer than me. I can comment on it, but please inform me, Madam Speaker, if this is a change to the rules of the House, or is it because of the informality of this body that I've witnessed this whole session?
Colleagues, it has always been the practice and tradition of this body for individuals to be able to ask questions of any member. It has also always been the prerogative and tradition of this chamber that member always has a choice of whether to accept the question or deny the question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for that response. Again, members, if you read the rules and you talk about what we're doing here, we're here to debate.
Are you making a parliamentary inquiry? If you wish to express your opinion, you'll need to hold on just a sec. To express an opinion on the use of rules or the proper use of rules is appropriate during remonstrances, but it is appropriate and in order now for you to make a point of parliamentary inquiry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the Speaker is informing this body that anyone on this floor can say, I don't want to answer your question. Is that correct?
The appropriate response to the request for someone to take a question is to answer either yes, I will take that question, yes, I yield, or no, I do not.
Mr. Speaker, that was not made on this floor. The comment was, I'll take one question. Is that appropriate?
Are you wishing to make another parliamentary inquiry?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Please state your inquiry.
Mr. Speaker, my question is, it was stated on this floor that I will only take one question. Is that part of our rules, or is it not part of our rules?
It is appropriate and traditional for a person to be able to clarify if they will state, I will take that question. It is upon occasion people say they will take two questions. Upon occasion, after taking two questions, they are asked if they'll take a third, and sometimes they do. But there is simply that clarification is in accordance with tradition and practice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll return to address this during remonstrances, but I think that was inappropriate to treat a member of the body like that.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cameron.
Further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill, but I can see by the number up there that it's coming pretty late in the session. And I understand that when we have priorities that we need to get done to protect the citizens and our constituents, we can get it done as quickly as we need to. This is a good bill for small business, and I urge your support on House Bill 3321. And I also need to declare a conflict of interest.
State your conflict for the record.
Potential conflict of interest is that I'm a member of a limited liability company who utilizes small group health plans.
So noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative David Edwards, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Madam Speaker. Firstly, I do want to clarify that this bill does not provide any mandates. Rather, the measure provides trade or employer associations options, and participation in such an arrangement is solely voluntary. Also, I, as a small business owner, I do want to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Your conflict?
I am founder and CEO of an S corporation that does not currently belong to an association that provides health plans, but may potentially in the future belong to such an organization. I should also state, for the benefit of other members who own a portion of a company, that the failure to declare a conflict in this case is, in the opinion of LC, defensible because of the class exception contained in ORS 244.020, subsection 14, subsub B. That provision exempts public officials from the requirement to declare a conflict of interest when an official action affects all members of a class to the same degree. And this bill will likely affect a significant number of people, that is, owners of small businesses, to the same degree, and so that class exception will apply.
Your conflict was so noted, Representative. Further discussion? No. Representative Nelson, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the staff summary of this House bill and in the House Committee on Consumer
Representative
Protection...
Representative Nelson, are you speaking to the bill?
No, ma'am, I'm just going to tell you something.
Representative Nelson.
It shows that
Representative Nelson, you need to declare what purpose do you rise?
Well, I've never had this happen before, so I don't. As long as I've been here in this session... I mean, in this legislature.
What are you trying to clarify, Representative?
Okay, ready? In the House Committee on Consumer Protection, it shows the vote in the committee was 6-4-1 nay and 0 excused or absent. The truth is I was excused and absent, so it was a unanimous vote, and this staff summary needs to be corrected. I didn't want that to be misleading for anyone.
Thank you, Representative, for your clarification, and we will certainly check with committee staff.
Thank you.
Further, Representative Smith, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the good representative bringing up the notion that each and every one of us may have a conflict, although we're covered by ORS statute. But with that said, just to err on the safe side, I have a significant financial interest in a small business that does have employees and does provide health care benefits and may at some point in time choose to participate in an AHP. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Your conflict is so noted. Representative Butler.
I rise to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Go ahead.
I've been working with our chambers of commerce in Eastern Oregon to try and get these kinds of programs up and running. And if they work properly, I'll probably join in our companies as well. Thank you.
Thank you. So noted. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I know the good representative clarified this very clear, but considering everyone else's declaration, I need to declare a potential conflict.
Your conflict is noted. State your conflict.
Thank you. My wife may already or may in the future participate in one of these health care programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. So noted. Representative Hannah.
I'd like to declare a conflict.
State your conflict.
I'm a member of a limited liability corporation that participates in a trade association health care program.
So noted for the record. Representative Thatcher.
I'd like to declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead. State your conflict.
I'm part owner of a company that participates in a trade association health plan.
Your conflict is so noted for the record. Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict.
Your conflict?
I have numerous LLCs, or I'm involved in numerous LLCs that have health benefit plans.
Your conflict is noted for the record. Representative Chris Edwards.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Your conflict?
My wife operates a small business that may benefit from this legislation.
So noted for the record. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise with a potential conflict.
Your conflict, sir?
I have an interest in a business that provides health care to its employees.
So noted, Representative. Any other conflicts? Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those who vote no, the clerk shall open the voting system. Representative Cannon votes no. Representative Greenlick votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen is off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? I didn't see you hiding over there. Jensen votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 3321, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3509, relating to Economic and Community Development Department.
The question now arises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 3509A. Representative David Edwards.
How about Chris Edwards?
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you House Bill 3509A from your Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. This bill is very simple. You'll find that the A. Engrossed version is about 2.5 pages long, yet most of that text relates to existing law relating to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. The changes to that law found in this bill can all be found within the final 18 lines of the bill. Within these 18 lines is a simple yet important concept for implementation within this agency. This bill stipulates that if a private sector business receives economic development assistance from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, which I might add is largely funded by taxpayer dollars, then that business will be required to sign a contract which states four things. First, at the time of signing the contract, the employer only employs individuals lawfully authorized to work in the U.S. Second, that during the time the recipient is likely to receive the economic or will be receiving the economic development assistance, the recipient will only employ individuals lawfully authorized to work in the U.S. Third, should that business be convicted of employing even one individual not lawfully authorized to work in the U.S., then that business is required to will be required to repay their assistance previously received under that contract. And fourth, should that come to pass, that business would also become ineligible for any further economic development assistance for a period of 5 years. In summary, a company receiving OECDD assistance signs a contract stating they do not and will not employ undocumented workers. If they are convicted of employing undocumented workers, they have to repay to the state all the development assistance money received. House Bill 3509A offers a common sense approach to addressing one aspect of the illegal immigration challenge and takes an important step in ensuring our constituents' tax dollars are spent wisely and fairly. I urge your support for House Bill 3509A.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. I think many of you have noticed that I was a no voting committee on this. I will probably support this today on the floor. But let me explain to you why my issues around this bill. This deal does almost nothing. It requires one very small agency only to obtain a piece of paper from contractors. It has some provisions for penalties, but essentially it does nothing. We have huge issues around immigration, and yesterday on this floor we had motions to bring forward bills which actually do something about this issue. Things like strengthening our licensing and ID requirements, things like strengthening our voting requirements, things like allowing district attorneys to transfer illegal immigrants convicted of crimes to the federal authorities. These are things we could be doing, but instead, we've brought forward this little bill. I hope all of you, in voting for this bill, don't go back home and say to your constituents, I voted for House Bill 3509 and I did something about immigration. What you did was create more bureaucracy. You didn't deal, if you vote for this bill, with the issues that your constituents want you to deal with. I don't know about you, but I get hammered daily with folks who say, we have a problem here, what are you doing about it? Don't go home and say this is all you did. You made one small agency go to their contractors and get one more piece of paper, because this is not dealing with immigration. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise in
support. To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you. I do rise in support of House Bill 3509. I think it makes sense that people who encourage the problems associated with illegal immigration should not be allowed to benefit from public tax dollars. The public already pays an enormous cost in public services, such as through education, health care, corrections, law enforcement, when our immigration laws are broken. And to compound that cost by giving state money and grants through OECDD to those who use these same illegal aliens is a bit absurd. So I applaud the sponsors of this bill. I think it takes a step in the right direction, and I hope that we can be intellectually consistent and also demand that other public benefits do not support those who are in this country illegally. I think it would be in keeping with the spirit of this bill to see it go further and to cover all state contracts and not just this one small agency. House Bill 3509 is a good bill, but I don't believe it goes far enough, so I hope
to be able to bring you a good bipartisan bill soon that will be more, comprehensive. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Just a short comment. I mean, this is going to pass, and it is a good step in the right direction. The interesting question that's already brought up that we all have to ask ourselves is, why are we going to make the private sector follow this set of rules and the public sector has a totally different set of rules? So we need to kind of close that gap between the double standard and the future. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A question for the carrier, please.
A question for the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
The carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative, for taking the question. During committee, was there any discussion about an employer who was trying to cooperate by filling out proper I-9s? And since we only have, in most cases, you have two documents, you're going to use a driver's license, which in the state of Oregon doesn't prove anything, and a Social Security card. And it sometimes takes a little while to submit that Social Security number, which is even optional, and to get back the invalid. Was there any discussion about that? If somebody were to employ somebody, worked them for a few days, and then found out that they didn't have a legal presence here and terminated them, what would happen to that employer?
Thank you, the representative from... Representative Cameron. I'll just tell you, Representative Cameron. And I appreciate you giving me a heads up on that question prior to asking it. I don't recall if there was discussion about that particular aspect of this. What I would clarify that this bill does is essentially a company that receives economic development assistance from the OECDD signs a contract, and that contract states that at the time of signing that contract, they do not employ undocumented workers, illegal immigrants, and then nor will they employ those folks in the future. That doesn't address exactly what it is that you're asking. I recognize that. I just wanted to clarify that on the record. You might want to ask somebody else from the committee if that was discussed or not. I don't recall that aspect was discussed. I see Representative Buckley has arisen, and perhaps he would like to help us out.
Representative Cameron, continue.
If Representative Buckley would like to yield to the same question, that's fine.
Representative Buckley, do you yield to the question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. We had a great discussion in committee. The key point, though, that you're raising, Representative, is covered on page 3 of the bill, line 18. The employer must be convicted of a federal charge of employing illegal workers before. So in the instance you're bringing up, someone who is simply involved with a paperwork shuffle with an employee, finds out the employee is not legal and terminates that employee, would not be restricted by this bill.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you. I guess that just raises some more questions. Question for the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Carrier yields.
Is there a definition of what convicted is for this bill?
A definition of convicted does not exist in the bill, to my knowledge. Let me check really quickly. So it sounds like it would be a court action of conviction. I mean, I don't know how else to define conviction.
Thank you. To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you for answering my questions, too. Colleagues, I think the questions and the answers here, I'll come back to that. The concept of this bill, as I've heard from a couple of colleagues, certainly makes sense. We don't want to use state money to reward an employer who's doing illegal activity by employing illegal aliens. I don't think any of us would answer to that to say that's a good thing. But the questions that arise here is, what's a conviction? I don't know how many of you on this House floor have had to hire people over the years and continue to go through and fill out I-9 forms, which I think have been law in this country now for darn near 20 years. But colleagues, a conviction, I'm not sure what that is. If that's the INS coming in and auditing I-9 forms and saying, oh, by the way, 5 years ago you employed illegal aliens, or right now you have a couple of potential illegal aliens on your payroll, maybe that's the conviction that you get fined. Maybe that's the conviction. I know. I'm trying to think the last time any business I've been associated has even been audited by a federal agency to see if there's any illegal people employed in that particular business. But here's the problem. The state of Oregon supplies one of the main documents that we use as employers to protect every citizen in this state. The good employers in this state want to protect the citizens in this state. They want to hire the right people. They want to hire the people that belong here and want jobs. And we use a driver's license, ODL, Oregon Driver's License. Colleagues, there's a lot of bills floating around this House that would be a lot more important to protect the citizens of this state. Some that have to do with ODL might work. So as an employer, I look at the driver's license. I have no idea, because the DMV isn't in this bill, and they don't get penalized for issuing a driver's license to an illegal alien. They don't get their money taken away. But no, the employer that uses that document, and one other usually, which is a Social Security card, that hires an illegal alien and tries not to, but gets caught later because our government is not doing its part to protect the citizens of this state. I'm sure this bill is going to pass big time, because there's a lot of people in here that, because of politics, say, I'm doing something about immigration. This does nothing about illegal immigration. This is a statement, just like the I-9s that we fill out now are just another piece of paper that we're going to require people to proceed to do, that does nothing to protect the citizens of this state. I appreciate the questions. I appreciate the yielding, and I'll sit down.
Further discussion. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we as a federal government, we as a state government, have failed our citizens. We allow people to come into this country illegally. We turn a blind eye to people that are here illegally. We won't allow our law enforcement to administer to the laws of this state or this country. This bill at least makes people aware that they aren't to hire people that are here illegally, that they are to hire American labor here in this country that we hold so dear. I think this is a step in the right direction. I do not think that it creates any bureaucracy as we do retention and expansions of loans through your Oregon Economic Development.
But more importantly, it's at least one piece. But the real problem still exists. We still have the 800-pound gorilla in the middle of the room that we're not talking about. And that's what we're going to do as a society and as a nation and as a state and a federal government to protect our borders, to not let it be like a sieve, to curtail the drug traffic. If you do away with people hiring people illegally, we wouldn't have an immigration problem. But we do not want to address that. And for that, I'm sorry to the people of the United States and the state of Oregon.
Further discussion. Representative Colizio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate the comments. And if we wait until one bill in the Oregon House is going to solve the immigration problem, I think we'd be here quite a long time. It would be like waiting for one bill to solve the one bottle bill to solve the recycling problem in the entire state of Oregon. No, this is not going to solve all of the immigration problems that exist in the United States or in Oregon. However, as others have said, this is a good, important first step. Immigration is primarily a federal issue, but the federal government is absolutely failing. So, we are doing what we can, and I want to thank the good representative from West Eugene for taking this important step and doing what we can here in Oregon to prevent Oregon taxpayer dollars to be funding illegal workers. So, despite the claim that this bill does nothing, just a couple of words about the fact that this bill does something. That's why we got bipartisan support in that committee. It ensures, number one, it ensures that Oregonians' tax dollars are not spent to employ workers who are in the country illegally. We all know that people primarily come here for economic reasons. They want a job. Even though they can find better jobs here, still has a negative impact on wages here in Oregon and around the country, and that's a problem. Employers are quick to hire folks for often unskilled labor in warehouses, farms, because they're willing to work on the cheap. That's a fact. This is a source of cheap and now replaceable labor, but it's at the expense, and that's why this bill is important as well. It's at the expense of those who are naturalized citizens or natural-born citizens and legal residents. So as we wait for the federal government, and we wait a long time, and we wait for them to get it together on immigration, we're going to do something. And this is one bill this session. This is not the only bill vis-a-vis this issue. So we're trying to take steps. The suppression of wages at the expense of all those who are legally empowered to work in Oregon shouldn't be encouraged by the state of Oregon, and the taxpayer dollar shouldn't be used to employ illegal immigrants. So this bill requires companies who receive community and economic development grants from the state to employ only legal workers, and we can rest assured that we ourselves are not contributing to the same problem that we've spent complaining about ad nauseum as far as the federal government. So House Bill 3509, it's a good bill. It will accomplish these things. I want to thank the good representative from West Eugene, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
I, too, want to thank my friend from West Eugene. This is one brick in the wall. And it's brick by brick around here. Nothing's done overnight or in one day or one session here. But I just want to tell you a little story. Family lore has it, and I've told this story before, family lore has it that my great-grandfather, would have been my mom's grandfather, stowed away on a boat from Ireland when he was 12, and he was alone. And he entered this country as an illegal immigrant. I stand before you as a descendant of an illegal immigrant. He wasn't handed an I-9. Wasn't handed a green card. He wasn't handed an Oregon driver's license. He was handed a shovel. and he and his descendants to follow him have helped, including me, I'm proud to say, have helped build this country into the greatest country ever. We talk about the benefits that some people get in this country who are here illegally. Granted, it's true. You can prove it. If you want to see benefits of their contribution to this country, all you got to do is open your eyes. You got to just look at the buildings they build, the produce they help grow and harvest, the goods they manufacture. Believe me, it has both sides to this sword. And the President of the United States, George W. Bush, a Republican, has recognized that. And he and his administration and the Congresses before have done nothing, just like the Democrat ones before him have done nothing. To say that this country can't harden the border after we built the Transcontinental Railroad, the Erie Canal, the Panama Canal, the federal highway system, sent people to the moon, and are currently building a $600 million boondoggle in Iraq called our embassy on 104 acres in the middle of a war. Tell me we can't harden that border and still keep it porous for people that have a reason to come into this country illegally, whether to work, study, or tour. You tell me we can't do that, you're wrong. This is just one little thing, and we all have a stake in this, and we can all do something about it. Drive through your neighborhood. See who's mowing those lawns. I can promise you. Check who's mowing your lawn. I can promise you there's illegal folks doing that work. Now, I don't buy into this argument that Americans won't do that work, because I grew up doing that work, and I mowed lawns for 5 years after work on the weekends and when I was laid off working on the labor's hall. So don't tell me Americans can't do that work either. I won't buy that. This is one small step in the right direction. And yes, we can go home and say we did something. I do not believe that. This is, employers have to take a part in this solution. We have to take part in the solution. The federal government has to too. And I think this is just a beginning in the step in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Further discussion. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
As one of the co-sponsors of this bill, I thought I should get up and answer a couple of questions that were asked and a couple of points that were made. To the point that this is, does almost nothing. I agree with some other speakers, like my good friend from Medford, that it's a step in the right direction. It's something that needs to be done. And as someone else has called it, it's a brick in the wall. This is something that needs to be done. The question was asked, why people who do the public work and not private employers? The answer is it's taxpayer money. We're here to protect taxpayers and protect their money. That's what we're here for. That's one of the big reasons that I'm here. I just want to say, yes, there will be other bills, and yes, we'll look at all of them and hope that they do something, as this one does. I just want to thank you for supporting this bill and urge an aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A question to the carrier?
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
The carrier yields.
Thank you. The simple question is, when a contractor that is going to enter into a contract, is he going to be responsible for his subs through this bill?
My understanding is that... Let me check really quick. So the bill speaks to direct recipients of economic development assistance. The bill does not specify subcontractors of those recipients. Does that clarify what the bill does and doesn't do?
Uh, actually, I'm a little bit confused, and I heard this bill, and I was confused even when I heard the bill in committee. So,
clarification, additional question,
yes,
Representative?
Yes.
Does the carrier yield? Does carrier yield to additional question?
Yeah.
Carrier yields. Representative Girard, your question?
Do you want me to direct it to the carrier of the bill. The fine recipient, then, I guess, would be the best way to ask the question, because what I have is a little bit of a fear that we have contractors, say, who are going to build a bridge through economic development. They have employed a certain number of people that are all legal, but the sub that delivers the concrete in the backyard doesn't have someone that's legal. Could that happen under this scenario?
I think the simple answer, with our interpretation of what the bill says, is no. I think that's the simple answer.
Well, I'll take your word for it and vote for the bill then.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I've just been informed that the bill, to Representative Girard's question, the bill does specify direct recipients of economic development assistance. And to a comment made by the good representative and my friend from Happy Valley, I want to assure him that I, in fact, did check with the guy mowing my lawn to make sure that he was here legally. And I had no reason to believe that he wasn't. But I made really clear, and he's actually a neighbor of mine. I share some concerns with the good representative from Salem-Armsville Turner, and a good representative from West Salem. That is why I did not present this bill as an omnibus immigration bill. This deals with one aspect of a very complex issue. I would like to point out for the record a list to address the assertion that this bill won't do much. I mean, it does apply under the OECDD. It does apply to the Oregon Business Development Fund, the Oregon Business Retention Program, the Oregon Capital Access Program, the Oregon Credit Enhancement Fund, the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund, Industrial Development Revenue Bonds and Express Bonds, and the local revolving loan funds, and about 10 more. I won't read them all. House Bill 3509 presents us with a unique opportunity to be proactive about the immigration problem facing Oregon. We sometimes forget that individuals who come to the United States illegally are largely here to work. Their choice to cross the border is often a financial decision. This is an issue that must be addressed. Immigration reform can't occur without taking away the financial incentive that encourages illegal immigration. If jobs for illegal immigrants continue to be readily available, we'll continue to struggle in vain to stem the tide of illegal immigration. The state of Oregon should not play a role in compounding the problem. I'm proud to offer this common sense solution to one piece of the illegal immigration problem. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Oh, Representative Crummell, how do you vote? Crummell votes aye. House Bill 3509A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose do you arise?
Could we return to courtesies, please?
The Representative Schaffler is requested to return to courtesy. Any objections? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler.
I just wanted to recognize, extend courtesies to my friend Steve March, former Representative March, up in the gallery. Everybody want to give him a big hi and wave?
Welcome, Representative March, former Representative March from Portland. Further courtesies? Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other businesses lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 560, relating claims for worker-related injuries by certain public safety officers.
Bill read first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 336, relating to school facility planning. Senate Bill 365, relating to textbooks. Senate Bill 544, relating to Department of State Lands, declared an emergency. Senate Bill 755, relating to education service districts, and declared an emergency.
Bills read for the second time are passed to the third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will call the roll. How about the clerk reads the bill?
Senate Bill 556, relating to occupational safety violation procedures.
Question now arises upon third reading and passage of Senate 556A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 556A is a simple bill. It makes two changes to the process following an Oregon OSHA violation. First, it extends the current time frame in which employers must file an appeal from 20 calendar days to 30 calendar days. This is comparable with time frames used around the country and with similar provisions in several other statutes relating to appeals, such as for most Bureau of Labor of Industry actions. The bill also extends the period before an unpaid penalty could be recorded as a judgment from 10 days after the order becomes final to 20 days after the order becomes final. There is no known opposition to this bill, and it passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee. I urge your yes vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those no will vote. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boone, how do you vote? Boone votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Garrard votes aye. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? Representative McPherson votes aye. Senate Bill 556A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 603, relating to requirements for directors for domestic insurers and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 603. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 603. Oregon insurance statutes require at least one-third or five of the directors of Oregon insurers, whichever is fewer, be in state residents. Oregon domestic insurance companies compete with much larger insurance who can offer higher pay to directors and wish to seek more flexibility in recruiting and retaining members with financial and marketing backgrounds to service on its board. While maintaining some minimum level of Oregon residence is considered appropriate, requiring that one-third of board members be Oregon residents restricts the pool of potential directors and makes recruitment of a diverse and well-qualified board more difficult. Because board members are often retirees, this limitation on out-of-state directors could also keep current experienced board members from remaining on the board if they move to another state. Senate Bill 603 reduces the minimum ratio of resident directors from one-third to one-quarter or five directors, whichever is fewer. The bill should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close?
Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Butler votes aye. Representative Cannon votes aye. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Excuse business of the House. Senate Bill 603, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 746, relating to exempt operating cemeteries.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 746A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 746 is a simple bill to reduce the fees that small cemeteries have to pay to the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. Biannual renewal fees for cemeteries are based on the number of burials and are currently at $4 per burial. There is a renewal fee exemption in current law that applies to cemeteries with five or few burials per year. Senate Bill 746 extends that exemption from cemeteries with five or few to 10 or few. This bill also lowers initial registration fees from $150 per cemetery with five or few burials to $100. It also puts the current fee for small cemeteries into statute as a cap and limits the fee for registration of principals to $50 regardless of number of principals. There is a small fiscal cost to the cemetery board. They raised no objection. It's a good bill. It helps your, you know, little small pioneer cemeteries that don't really do much in the way of burials, but it helps them sort of be part of our scenic Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker. I won't make any reference to dead cemetery bills.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 746A. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Boquist votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Nelson votes aye. Senate Bill 746A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 835 relating to workers' compensation death benefits.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 835. Yeah. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 835 directs the Workmen's Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, or MLAC, to conduct a study for the adequacy of death benefits in the workmen's compensation system. Under current law, workers' compensation statute sets a specific benefit amounts for the survivors of the workers that die on the job. Monthly benefits are provided for the spouse of a deceased worker, dependent children, and other kinds of dependents. The benefits are tied with the state's average weekly wage. In addition, the statute provides a burial benefit of up to 10 times of the Oregon average weekly wage. The study required by the bill would include an evaluation of the current method of calculating burial benefits in relation to the actual cost of the burial, current formulas of determining benefits, categories of beneficiaries who are entitled to benefits, and the feasibility of providing lump sum benefit payments. MLAC is required to report the results of the study to the Legislative Assembly by January 31, 2009. MLAC supports Senate Bill 835, and the House Business and Labor Committee unanimously approved this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Carrier yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and Representative. For the purposes of kind of building the record on this, I notice that in my file there is not a fiscal impact statement, and it does say on the SMS that no fiscal impact statement has been filed. How is it contemplated by the committee that this study that's going to be done by MLAC be paid for?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Representative, but I believe that it hasn't been done yet. MLAC is in place, so it will hardly affect what they do anyway, since they're there anyway. That's their job to be there, so therefore they're going to do the study. So therefore, I don't believe we have an anticipated economic impact.
Thank you. I'm
done. Further discussion? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Very quickly, this is a good bill. I want to draw your attention to one of the issues discussed in committee that I think is very important for the MLAC committee to look at as well during the interim, and that is examples of parents who filed for workers' compensation fatality benefits on behalf of their children and the legal obstacles they face. I have a constituent, very tragic story, whose daughter died as a result of a workplace injury, and it was his unfortunate surprise that although he was counting on her benefits and her work to help pay for his and his wife's retirement, they were not eligible to receive the death benefits that would otherwise accrue to her dependents. So I encourage your aye vote on this bill. It's a good bill, an important bill. I look forward to the results of this study. Thanks.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Dahlem, how do you vote? Representative Dahlem, off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen's off the floor. Senate Bill 835, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Friday, June 1st, for third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day having been completed? Announcements. I have a memorandum from the Speaker. In order to complete the work of the 74th Legislative Assembly and to provide for an orderly move toward signing the adjournment, I declare, in compliance with House rules, that the public interest would be seriously prejudiced by delay. Effective Monday, June 4th, 2007, I am therefore invoking House Rule 8.15, subsection 6, to suspend the requirement that 48 hours notice be given for work sessions during committee meetings. If the meeting schedule is for the purpose of taking public testimony, at least 24 hours notice must be given. Further announcements. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Your House Energy and Environment Committee has completed its work for the 74th legislative session, and we will meet only at the call of the Speaker.
Further announcements, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to announce that the House Business and Labor Committee has completed the work of the 74th legislature and will meet only at the call of the Chair.
Further announcements, Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your House Transportation Committee has completed its work for the 74th legislative session and will meet at the call of the Chair.
Further announcements, Representative Scott.
Thank you. Republicans, grab your lunch and head to the caucus room.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm pleased to report the House Committee on Education has completed its work and will be meeting now only on the call of the Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The House Democrats will caucus. Get your lunch.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm happy to tell you also that the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy has completed its work and is closed except at the call of the co-chairs. Thank you.
Other announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. You know, we have so much to be grateful for. This past weekend, we're grateful for those that have given the ultimate sacrifice. We have a wonderful state with a beautiful day out there. And most of all, I think we can be grateful that no one can yield time to me during a remonstrance. You know, last week we passed a very bad bill, but I was afforded the full respect of this House to argue and dissent. I went on so long and loud that day that when the Speaker asked if I wished to close, the gentle lady from Milwaukee, who, by the way, has been paid in her past life to listen to people's problems, yelled no. And I'm very grateful for the representative from the Heart of Tigard who, in summing up my performance that day, came up to me and said these words. He said, "I want you to know that the symbolism of recycling your argument over and over and over was not lost on me." I don't feel any differently about that bill than I do now, but we got to move on. So in the few seconds that I have left, I want to share with you my top three moments so far and my three worst moments so far in this session. And I do so to hopefully encourage Representative Nelson not to interrupt me. So here are my three worst. We'll get those out of the way. Seriously, the worst thing that happened was the day that I walked in here and found out that my predecessor had passed away. And the second, for me, was the day that we supposedly showed fiscal restraint and put a rainy day fund in, showing no restraint at all and just stealing it from a corporate kicker. The third I've already mentioned, and I won't go into it, is a very empty bottle bill. But, moving on, three top moments that same day that they announced that my predecessor had passed away, and I stood and found that I couldn't speak. And I was supposed to introduce some honorary pages. And my friend from Ashland came over and read my opening ceremonies for me. And that same lady from Milwaukee put her hand on my back and said, "I've got your back." And the representative from Aloha brought me a glass of water. The second best day for me was when I was completely surprised, by, like everyone else, by this gentleman right here when he said, "Mr. Speaker, I will vote, just not now." He did it out of integrity, and I was impressed. And lastly, as if all the people that we've had in here singing, sharing poetry, and praying weren't enough, last week our own Margaret Carter came in here and sang and took us to church. And the song was, "If I Can Just Do Something for Someone Else." And that's the kind of representative I want to be, and that was my highest moment so far. I want to know yours. Thanks. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Schaffler.
Well, Madam Speaker, I wish this were my highest moment today. As evidenced earlier, I generally get my remonstrance squeezed into some kind of bill. But today there's a headline in the business section of the Oregonian. It says, "Chinese plywood worries U.S. Some manufacturers tell the Senate panel that hardwood plywood from China needs better regulation." You know, it is criminal that this state imports a stick, a toothpick of imported wood, when we have the most abundant renewable resource in wood in the world right here. You know, the bumper sticker that says, "Think globally, act locally." Well, you know what? We're importing recklessly processed wood into this state while we're watching this wonderful resource burn and rot, and we're not taking advantage of it. And it is harming our environment not to do it. Now, we talk about immigration and the lack of political will to do anything about it. Well, you know what? We're guilty of that too right here. While we scratch and claw and struggle to find money for our education and road system, we're wasting an abundant, economically and environmentally renewable resource and importing Chinese plywood that's poisonous. You know what? We have the enemy. We all have a common enemy. It ain't the Chinese. It ain't the Mexicans. It's us.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rose earlier today during the floor session. I used my personal privilege button, and I followed the rules as described in the House to question a decision by a member of the House. I understand by tradition that we do have and have exercised the right to not accept questions. So I stand corrected. However, it says you may, and I would encourage this body. The next few weeks are going to be very trying and very tasking and very pressure laden for us to get through with the people's business. I think that my point was the way that was done and the way the member was addressed. And I think we all should respect. I'm here. I read these things about maintaining professionalism. That's under paragraph 601 in the legislative process of all members in the. And that's what I'm asking all of us to do, to work together, to get the people's work done. I think that my point of privilege this morning was about the way that it was refused. I still think as a debating body and doing the people's work, we should show courtesy to each other and allow them to answer questions. I would also encourage people to try as hard as we can to get the questions to the other members as early as possible out of respect to them. I don't disagree with that. But again, my comment to you today and ask is that we, you know, respect each other. We may disagree on many issues and many times, but please show the respect to the other party that you would expect them to show you.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As many of you do, I run a just-in-time operation. And this means that I'm reading the bills immediately before and during session, just like many of you are. I have to turn the page.
There have been times that I have tried to let people know when I'm going to have questions on the floor, and for whatever reason have not been able to get to them. They've been involved in other conversations and not wanting to be rude and interruptive. I don't. Or there are a variety of other reasons. Be that as it may, I believe that when a member has a question, that the question should be answered. Whether or not they have asked the question in advance, quite frankly, is irrelevant. And maybe it's my teacher training, because, you know, students are firing questions all the time, and they don't tell me in advance when they have a question. And I have always made it a practice that whenever a member has a question, whether they have given me an advance notice or not, I will answer the question. If I'm not prepared to carry the bill on the floor, that is not the fault of the other member. That is my own fault. And I think that we need to always be prepared when we are carrying a bill on the floor for the unanticipated. And I have always appreciated whenever a member has given me an advance warning about a question, and the courtesy that's being extended, but I have never expected it, nor will I expect it in the future. Over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be carrying some more bills on the floor. Feel free to stand up and powder me with whatever questions you want. I don't care, because I will be ready. I will be prepared, and I will answer your question, regardless of what it is, as long as it pertains to the bill. And I hope that when I stand up and ask a question, whether I have given you advance warning or not, you are prepared to answer the question, because maybe my yes vote doesn't matter, but maybe it does. But if I don't get my questions answered, I may not vote in favor of a bill. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, and with all respect to my colleagues, I appreciate the words that have been stated. Representative Wisnitz, I think, framed it very, very well. I would just like to point out, with all respect, I'm holding a copy of bills that's 20 pages long. If a question needs to be asked and answered for the good of the body, of course, that's what the process is for. If the question does not have to be answered for the entire body, but needs to be answered just for one representative's education on a bill, I would submit that the best thing to do for the good of the body is to talk to the carrier of the bill or someone who's on the committee to get your question answered. We have a lot of work to get done, and respecting the time of the House and the time of every member who is involved with one of the 20 pages of bills that we have on our agenda is also an important factor for us to take into consideration. So I hope that we all will do that when we determine whether we will stand up to ask questions, whether it's necessary for the entire floor to hear the question or not, and to limit our questions in light of the amount of work that we must get done. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m., Friday, June 1st, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, June 1st, 2007, unless there are any questions.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, June 1st, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.